Britain's economy is under pressure. Services are stretched and public trust is thin. And the search for solutions is growing urgent. Reform UK has stepped forward with a plan that breaks from the political norm on tax, immigration, energy, and the role of the state. Some see clarity, others see risk. What matters is what the proposals actually mean. This is the Reform UK Economic Examination. My name is Rehan.
And my name is Sasha.
And welcome to Capital and Consequences. Sasha, how does it feel? It's been some time since we recorded the our next episode.
I know, it's the holidays and then the looming exams. It's great to be finally back.
Yeah, thank you very much for waiting a while before this, and sorry about the delay. But it's great to be back, and we're back with quite a big episode.
I feel like this is going to be probably very in-depth, and can I actually highlight, you know, not some, you know, some false rumours, but also try to really have a deep dive on this topic.
Yeah, and just for a little note, we're going to be doing this about every major UK party.
Yeah.
So we're going to do this about Reform, Green, Labour, Lib Dem and the Tories.
And we also, if it gets very popular, we also may do Plaid Cymru at the SNP and see how their economic strategies for their, and for example, the Republicans in Northern Ireland. We have some interesting economic policies, which we would love to go into more depth.
Definitely. I also think like we might go over to different countries, compare their economic policies with ours, and just like, we might do a little bit more updating on like a little bit more current affairs.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's all a lot to look forward to.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's great to be back. So, what do you think about the Reform UK? Their plan.
So the main core economic strategy of the Reform is essentially low tax, small state, supply side framework. So. Firstly, they talk about tax cuts, which may boost incentives. They say that they'll do spending cuts, reducing the state size. They want to deregulate, hoping that increase in efficiency and lower immigration, so they can tighten the labor market and create an energy shift to reduce costs.
Yeah. So let's first do tax and how the economy. So firstly, what they want to do is they want to cut corporation tax from 25% to 20% immediately when they get into power. And then from 20% to 15% by year three. And that's their goals. And so what do you think of that? Because that's obviously a big push. Like that's a huge cut, 10% by 3 years. So what do you think, where do you see yourself and how do you think that's going to impact businesses and...
So currently now, the OBR says that if we cut 1% of GDP in tax cuts, it only increases by 0.3 GDP increase. And that one thing which Reform always likes to talk about, how tax is the only way they're financing the UK. It's not. The IMF said that the supply side tax cuts rarely recover from their own cost in advanced economies from, for example, the lack in... lack in real helping fund. So, and we saw this tax cut as a test. So when, in 2022, the UK mini budget was demonstrated and they talked, and what caused was that the borrowing cost surge, financial instability followed, and nearly £45 billion pounds were unfunded tax cuts. And the markets rejected the assumption that growth would compensate for the tax cuts. Also, and Reform, if they go with this tax cut, they must reassure the markets that the growth will compensate for the tax cuts. And with this volatile economy, I don't believe that will happen.
Yeah. So let's just put this in context. So let's say a firm is making around £1 million a year. Currently, they would pay around £250,000 in tax. But what Reform want to do is by year three, they want to bring it down to 15% corporate tax, which means they'll only pay £150,000 in tax, which means that creates £100,000 in savings, which can be used for new machinery, R&D, or just hiring two or three more additional staff members. This also helps small businesses because by raising the threshold to £100,000, Reform is claiming that 1.2 million SMEs would be removed from corporation tax net entirely, which would reduce accounting and compliance costs and would allow, in their opinion, for the growth of small businesses.
Mm.
So now the big question is, because obviously you gave us all of that information about taxes and how it can affect the economy, do you think that when we have more businesses, let's say, we'll take the positive side, we'll say this is a huge success and more businesses do start propping up, do you think that is actually a good idea to have more businesses in the UK paying less corporation taxes and stuff like that?
Well, if, for example, we take the positives in and we assume that the ideas worked and that the markets believed in this reform idea and and the tax cut didn't cause a borrowing surge or create financial stability. If it was all, you know, rainbows for reform, it would firstly create more jobs for people because companies would take more and more people and try to, you know, make the horrible job crisis we have in the UK be resolved. And one thing currently now with inflation where people are struggling to buy because, for example, the war in Iran, if we have all these small companies and it will create this large amount of competition, and competition is great, not only for great for the consumer, as it make companies have to be more competitive on prices, competitive in wages, and allows for more growth in the economy. So if it does work out, there'll be large benefits.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think it would become a magnet for FDI, which is foreign direct investment,
yep.
Which is essentially that at 15% of corporation taxes, the UK would become a G7 outlier compared to the rest of the states. And what I think this would mean is a lot of HQ relocations into the UK. So we'd likely see a wave of European and American multinationals, moving their headquarters to London or Manchester to shield global profits.
And that would be very beneficial for the workforce. And currently now, the UK is one of the lowest countries in the G7 for investment. And if reform do try to resurgerate the investment in the UK, there would be massive amounts of GDP growth. Well, for example, currently now our investment in the UK is around 15 to 18%. This is much lower than the average, for example, in France, where it's 25 or 20. Mm-hmm. This outlier not only creates less investment in the UK and makes the job market so much harder and much more competitive.
And in fact, we've seen that as well in Ireland.
Mm.
Yeah, with the huge growth spurts where they used a low tax base to attract the biggest tech and pharma companies into Ireland. So definitely, if it does work, it's going to be a huge success. But like you said, there's a huge chance that it might not work. Like firstly, because of the Liz Truss market panic and the fiscal instability that would happen if there was suddenly a £20 billion annual hole in the Treasury's budget. Hopefully, if we see this happen, there is definitely likelihood to have a huge success from cutting corporation taxes. But at the same time, if it doesn't work and reform don't find a way to fund this, then we are going to have a huge problem, and I don't think reform would be in power for that long at all. Next, let's move on to taxes and income taxes instead. So what reform want to do is to lift the personal allowance threshold from £12,570 to £20,000. And they want to lift the higher rate, which is 40% of income taxes, that threshold from £50,000 to £270,000 to £70,000. Yeah. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, income tax is a really great way for people to have not only more confidence in the government, because currently now there's been a, you know, nearly a circus of all these different prime ministers, and it creates a sense of lack of trust in the prime minister and lack of assurance of the political system. And if we do create the sense of a tax cut, income tax cut, we not are great because it'd be more disposable income.
Yeah,
and this can really help, especially in urban areas, have a sort of multiplier effect, where as people have more disposable income, they'll spend on more local businesses, and then local businesses have more to invest into their company, allowing for more disposable income for their workers, and this creates a multiplier effect where the economy just keeps on growing, mm-hmm. and. So, but there's a lot of negatives in where if we cut income tax, many services will be in having to cut services. And one of the main reform policies is cutting down on spending. But, and so currently now, the UK spends around 45% of GDP on the public. For example, and it breaks down like this. So currently now, 12% go to pensions, 9% of the GDP go to NHS, mm-hmm. 60% to welfare or, you know, working age, 4 to 5% to education, and around 4% in debt interest. The IFS, or Institute for Fiscal Studies, estimates that the only really cuttable efficiency the UK has is around 10 to 20 billion pounds, if the most aggressive. But that is not very meaningful at all. Most meaningful tax cut often costs 60 billion or more. And this gap must be filled by either borrowing or core service cuts. And an evidence of this was post 2010 in the UK, where austerity was very popular. And this is where public investment fell significantly and productivity growth stagnated to around 0 to 1%, but in versus pre-2008, which is around 2%. And if we keep on trying to cut spending, it actually causes weaker long-term growth.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, cutting taxes and cutting services, the taxes must make up for the cut in sublet services. Where, for example, if we cut public services, that'll be around 1 to 2% of GDP cut, and tax only generates about 0.6 GDP, so it'll actually have a negative on the GDP.
Yeah, and. So one thing that Reform UK want to do, so to obviously pay for all of this tax cuts, besides just the welfare stuff, is regarding the Bank of England and the reforms. So right now, let's say, just to keep this in context, let's say that you have a savings account in a bank, right?
Yep.
And the bank is forced to pay you 5% interest on every penny you have. Even if they don't want you to, right? Now, what's going on is that you are a massive commercial bank, right? Barclays or HSBC, right? And the bank is the Bank of England. So right now, the government pays billions in interest to big banks on money that they have parked at the Bank of England. And Reform wants to stop these payments because, yeah. So that's really good, because essentially it's free money for the government. It gives them £35 billion and it takes billions away from wealthy banks and puts it into public services without ever needing to raise your taxes. However, critics say that this might be like a hidden tax on banks, because if banks lose £35 billion, they might make up for it by charging you more for a car loan or making it harder for your parents to get a mortgage or something like that. So there is definitely a win, which is that they want to do this huge reform, which will give them £35 billion to reinvest, and that would cover, hopefully, the tax cuts that they plan to do. But at the same time, it might wind back onto the consumers, and it might be harder for car loans or mortgages, and we might see those interest rates start to increase.
And if those interest rates increase, won't GDP decrease too of that? And growth, because if inflation will decrease, but if, for example, reform does what it's planning to do with the banks, it will cause more people to save their money, mm-hmm. and more people to try and less spending in the economy. Firstly, decrease GDP.
Yeah.
But also, it may cause decrease in inflation. So we really have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely. Also, the next thing I want to talk about is inheritance taxes. Yep. So reform wants to give a 0% inheritance tax on estates valued under £2 million. And Sasha, because you decided to make this exact cut on a book that we were doing, and for the listeners, we were me and Sasha and I were doing a book called Can You Run the Economy, right? I think it was a really good story, definitely. And essentially, it would give you prompts and decisions that you had to make. And doing that would either affect your public rating or your budget surplus. And you wanted to keep both of them in the high. And Sasha, you made this exact decision on the book. And do you remember what was the reaction to it?
Well, the people were very unhappy.
The people were happy. With the inheritance taxes,
very unhappy. I raised the inheritance.
You raised inheritance.
Yeah,
taxes.
I raised it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. What did they say?
So when I raised inheritance tax, people were very unhappy. But if we did what Rehan was talking about and cut it,
that's what I did.
Yeah, that's what he did. It was very popular with the populace, but it really reduces the amount the country is able to spend on the economy.
And yeah. I mean, I remember it was to my budget surplus, it was something around minus £2 or 3 billion. Now, obviously, that book is not going to be the most accurate because the IHT estimates that it raises around £8.7 billion. And while that's only 0% of all tax income, it's still billions of pounds that pays for the NHS, schools and infrastructure. And the pros of for inheritance taxes, which are why they like it, is that firstly, some economists argue that massive inheritances can actually make their heirs less productive, and taxing a portion of that windfall will encourage them to participate in the workforce. But many also argue that it is fairer to tax unearned wealth than to tax like earned income, which is the money that people are working 40 hours a week for. But what reform is essentially saying is that it hurts a lot of family businesses and farms. And under new rules starting in April 2026, 100% relief on farms and businesses is capped at £2.5 million, which means that families with assets above this may be forced to sell parts of the farm or businesses just to pay the tax bill, which is absurd and can also destroy like the business completely. What were you going to say?
I mean, on the point of farmers, one thing which Farage has talked massively about is net zero.
Ah, definitely. Yeah.
So the party long claimed that it'll consider making considerable savings from entirely scrapping the ideas of trying to reach net zero by of carbon emissions by 2050. Inside the party's manifesto, it suggests it could save nearly £30 billion each year for the next 25 years by ending subsidies related to renewable power regeneration and emission reductions. Richard Tice, the party's deputy leader, said that the Office for Budget Responsibility, or OBR, the government independent spending forecaster, now agrees with those figures. However, in the most recent fiscal risks and stability report from July 2025, the OBR said the peak annual public sector investment cost of the government's decarbonisation policy was £16.1 billion in 2035 and declining to £2.8 in 2050. And it added that the average annual cost over the 25 years would be 9.9 or 0.3% of the GDP. Mm-hmm. But also, in that report, OBR did put that the overall fiscal cost of the net zero transition at the transition would average around 30 billion a year. However, if people continue to switch to electric vehicles and the government did not replace fuel duty with a new levy on road users, those fiscal costs would still face a future reform government.
Yeah, so what their proposals are is to essentially scrap net zero, isn't it? Yeah. They want to cancel the 2050 targets. They want to legally abolish the Climate Change Act of 2008 and the 2050 target. And they argue that the UK is impoverishing itself while China, India, and the US continue to burn fossil fuels. This is good because when they remove the green levies from bills, by 2026, they're expected to account for roughly £150 to £200 per year for the average household. And if the UK doesn't have to meet strict carbon targets, heavy industries like we're talking steel and glass are able to face lower costs than they would in the EU, and potentially bring manufacturing jobs back to the UK. But they would likely face carbon tariffs from the EU and other trading partners, making British exports more expensive. And also, a lot of global capital is moving towards green tech. Like, we're talking electric cars, EVs, Tesla is huge. Even the Chinese are bringing in such revolutionary technology. And by scrapping the target, the UK might risk losing billions in investments for electric vehicles, batteries, carbon captures to countries like Germany, US, China, or all their competitors. And that's a huge problem, just economically. And we're not even talking about the environmental problems, besides the fact that it's just incredibly, in my opinion, immoral if we're suddenly doing that, because that brings it onto our generation to suddenly have to pull up a miracle. And what do you think, Sasha?
I mean, it's such a hard question to answer because there are large economic benefits of the significant cut. It really does put a significant burden on the future generation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why so many younger people are supporting the Green Party, because the Greens try to promise, especially to young people, that they can fix and try to help them build the next generation.
I mean, we're definitely going to do a deep dive of them maybe next week.
Exactly, yeah.
Because Greens is going to be a very interesting one.
So this is the Reform UK's manifesto. The current costs are now, firstly, the personal tax cuts they're promising, which they say will cost around 70 billion. We already talked about the business tax cuts, and that will cost around 18 billion. But they also talked about how they'll spend more on the NHS and extra defence spending, 17 and 14 billion respectively.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Firstly, what they want to do is incorporate a mixed model, which is like a French or German style, especially for the NHS, which is that Reform argues that the UK is too
ideologically.
Yeah, we got that. Attached to the current NHS model. And they proposed using private hospitals and clinics to clear the backlog. And if the NHS can't treat you in, let's say, 3 weeks, you get a voucher to go to a private hospital and the government would pay the bill. So, this would work because it definitely would reduce capacity, reduce waiting lists, all of that in the NHS, which is a huge problem. And it also gives you the patient power, because it gives you the right to choose, because you're no longer stuck on a list for 2 years. You get the power to go and seek treatment elsewhere. And countries like France, Germany, Switzerland have done this in their countries with success, where private and public work go together, and they often have much higher survival rates for cancer and heart diseases than the UK. But the cons is that, firstly, critics argue that private companies will take the easy surgeries for profit, leaving the NHS with the expensive chronic cases, but with now less budget to handle them. And also that if the government pays private clinics to do NHS work, those clinics might just hire NHS doctors away with a better pay.
Mm.
And so you end up with the same number of doctors just working in different buildings, right?
Yeah.
So that's a huge problem. But yeah, that's what I'd say. Do you have anything to add?
I mean, I agree fully. I mean, it's the defense. Well, Farage is really trying to replicate with Trump on, you know, safety through strength, and trying to try and use its you know, increased military spending to quite get more hard power or power through military, and try to get what the UK wants. And after the harsh report written by the Labour ex-Labour Minister of Defence, where he highlighted how the UK is in danger and how it's unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
These extra defence spending might allow for the UK to be prepared for this volatile moment in the world. And on extra defence spending, NHS is such a vital part of everyone who lives in the UK as part of their lives. And I feel like cutting it would be not only a disservice to the UK people, but a disservice to all those brilliant people who work for the NHS and how much they've done for us. But I really want to focus on how the election said Reform has pledged to deport some 600,000 unauthorised migrants over when it gains Parliament. And this is so highlighted with the BBC article, where they highlighted how people are viewed as gay or lesbian to try to get asylum in the UK.
Yeah, okay.
So what do you think about where people fake being LGBTQ, not only causing people who are actually gay to be, you know, not believed, and causing people who actually need the asylum to be rejected, but only the people's sense of selfishness to try and break through the system which tries to help people who actually are in need?
Yeah, it is. It's a very big concern. And that almost kind of brings us on to arguably the heart of their economic policies, which is immigration.
Yeah.
And their immigration policies. And essentially, what Reform want to do is they want to legally cap non-essential migration at a net zero, which means for every person going out, one person can come in. And they want to issue this quote-unquote visas for critical roles. So we're talking in the NHS and social care, though they've also recently signaled that they want these sectors to become eventually quote-unquote trained British. And so the arguments for is that it's going to increase wages for sure. If there's a shortage of workers, businesses have to compete for the people who are already there, which forces them to raise wages for the lowest paid, which are like cleaners, delivery drivers, etc. And also with net migration hitting 764,000 people in 2023, supporters would argue that building a new city the size of Birmingham every year is impossible, which is because it really is. And that a freeze allows the housing market, which, as we talked about in a previous episode, to catch up, and GP surgeries to catch up. But a huge con against this and a huge problem that I want to spend some time talking about is about the tax gap, which is that most migrants are young and working, and so they pay tax, but they don't also use the NHS as much as the elderly. So the IFS warns that stopping migration could actually increase the national debt, because there would be fewer taxpayers to pay for the aging UK population.
Yeah. I mean, the migrants have been the backforce of the UK for nearly, 60 years, from when the Windrush generation, where they come from, you know, the past UK colonies, mainly from, you know, some from Barbados, Jamaica, etc. And these people did the jobs which the UK public did not want to do. And there are many supposed benefits to Reform are talking about how more job competition and allow for more people to get the wages which they do deserve in this rise of inflation. But one thing which I feel like Reform are forgetting to talk about is how these people who move and immigrate to the UK aren't doing jobs which are complex or on demand, and are rather jobs which the UK public feel like they're overqualified to do. Currently, the UK has a massive overqualification problem, where so many people are getting university degrees, but there's not enough jobs to compete. And if we do take away and try to cut immigration to net zero, one of the problems I fear will be happening where there'll be no one to do the jobs which no one else wants to do.
Like, yes,
for example, NHS, what's it called? Garbage collection. These jobs do not want to be done by the public, but needed to be done to make our government running and our public services running. What do you think?
Yeah, and definitely, we've already seen this since we left the EU, which is now getting a plumber. A plumber is so hard.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. And like these migrants are definitely doing a lot. And the other thing that reform want to do is that they want to add a 20% employer immigration tax, which is the boss has to pay 20% if a worker is a migrant. But what that means is that companies aren't just going to absorb that extra cost, right? They're going to pass it on to you, not just like the migrants, but also the people working as part of the company, which means it would mean more expensive building work, care home fees, restaurant bills, etc. And that's all big. Yeah. So just to summarize, the reform, what do they want to do? They want to keep very little of the status quo. That much is we've determined. They want to repeal the Equality Act. They want to repeal Labour's Employment Rights Act. And they most definitely want to repeal all net zero mandates. You can also expect corporation tax to come to 15%, income tax for millions to go to 0%, and to abolish inheritance tax for a lot of people. And as for immigration, they want to bring it down to net zero.
And these are the numbers of Rehan's policy. So the current claimed costs of reformers' manifesto are these. Personal tax cuts, which they say would cost 70 billion, business tax cuts, as Rehan talked about, which will cost 18 billion. Extra NHS and extra defence will cost around 31 billion and other miscellaneous around 22 billion. But these are the claimed savings. All this talk about immigration will actually only save them £5 billion compared to the scrapping net zero, which they say around 30 billion, but the other, for example, the IFSS say around be 22 million, below what the reformer is trying to say. Stop QE interest, where paying interest to the banks, and cutting waste, which will cost around, which will save around 50 billion, they say, and other miscellaneous around 30.
Yeah, so definitely. So all in all, if this works out, if they find a way to fund this, it could potentially lead to a huge UK global economic boom, and it might fix a lot of issues. But if it fails, and if, like Sasha said, they don't find a way to fix this money, it's going to lead to chaos. It's going to lead to thousands of people getting fired for no reason. It's going to lead to huge inflation. And it's not going to be good for the UK economy. So, my name is Rehan.
And I'm Sasha.
And that was our Reform UK deep dive. Thank you.